This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Ted Chabasinski is an American psychiatric survivor, human rights activist, and attorney who lives in Berkeley, California. At the age of 6, he was taken from his foster family's home and committed to a New York psychiatric facility. Diagnosed with childhood schizophrenia, he underwent intensive electroshock therapy and remained an inmate in a state psychiatric hospital until the age of 17. After his release, Ted Chabasinski trained as a lawyer and became active in the psychiatric survivors movement. In 1982, he led a successful campaign seeking to ban the use of electroshock in Berkeley, California. Chabasinski, now 76 years of age, was in San Francisco over the weekend of May 19th to 21st, 2013, for protests held against the American Psychiatric Association during its 2013 annual general meeting. We speak now with Ted Chabasinski.
Welcome to People First Radio, Ted.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Ted, tell us about that protest in San Francisco. Why was it held?
Well, I think we try to follow the APA around wherever it goes if we have people there. And basically, you know, my story sounds horrible, but there are a lot of equally horrible stories. And basically, psychiatry has a huge amount of power, which they misuse. That's always the case. Power always corrupts. And in particular, right now, as I think any of your listeners who are following this controversy, I've seen some articles from Canadian publications as well. They just came out with their new Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, number 5, which sort of really goes over the top. My estimate, you know, having just glanced some at their criteria, is you could really diagnose about 80% of the population as mentally ill. I mean, there's some marvelous examples there. Well, I won't go into it now, but that we're trying to emphasize that too. I mean, I think everybody is. There's a whole bunch of controversy about it, and I think that the psychiatrists have shot themselves in the foot. For instance, if a two-year-old has tantrums, he or she is labeled as having, what is it, dysphoric temperament regulation, something like that, which they were calling bipolar, and then everybody got mad at that. And, of course, the treatment is drugs, right? And then if you, like, let's say you're an 80-year-old woman or man and your spouse of 50 or 60 years just died, you have 14 days to grieve, and after that you're considered to be clinically depressed, and the treatment for that is drugs. What else? And then the new one is internet addiction. If you're on your computer for more than 2 hours a day, then you have a mental illness, and treatment for that, of course, would be drugs. Well, this is like, it's just going beyond the beyond, and I think one of the things we wanted to bring to people's attention is how endangered they are by this. Psychiatry has become kind of a religion. That is, they make all these claims. There's no good evidence for it. The only solid evidence is that the more money's been spent on psychiatric and mental health treatment, and the more money's been, more people have been put on psychiatric drugs, the higher the number of people that the psychiatric profession says are mentally ill. Now, does that make any sense? I mean, if you said you had a cure for cancer, okay, and so the government gave you billions of dollars for your cure for cancer, and everybody came coming to your office for your cure for cancer, and the statistics showed that since your cure from cancer came out, more and more people have cancer, wouldn't that be crazy to believe that? But people seem to believe it with psychiatry. It's become a kind of a secular religion. So we're trying our best to educate people about this, and I think it's very important for your listeners to realize that it's not, these things aren't just applied to these, you know, weird people who wander the streets talking to themselves and attacking people every once in a while. That's a whole issue, too, about so-called violence. It could apply to anybody because the psychiatrists are busy just applying these labels to everyone. I saw an estimate, the latest thing in the United States, the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, now says that 20% of American children, of United States children, are mentally ill. Now, come on. You know, and people just accept this. It's interesting to me as well that if you Googled prevalence of mental illness, you would find from all these various official groups, the APA, the CDC, the NIMH, and whatever bodies you have in Canada, the estimates just wildly variable depending on what point they're trying to make at the time. You know, I don't think there's really any good statistics, but I don't believe that 20% of children are mentally ill. I don't believe that 15% of United States school-age boys have a brain disease called ADHD. I mean, it's just nonsense.
You and I spoke.
And then it's really easy to lock people up. I don't know what the Canadian law is. I think it's more evolving there because your Charter of Rights is fairly new, I believe. Being a lawyer, I observe that with great interest. But here, at least you have there has to be some, in theory anyway, there has to be some actual behavior that can get you locked up. They can't just say you're in need of treatment, which used to be the standard until 1975 with a case called Donaldson versus O'Connor. I don't know what you have in Canada, but I hope you don't have a whole lot of provinces with laws that say you can be locked up if you're in need of treatment, because I've never seen a psychiatrist who doesn't think you're in need of treatment. And this just affects a lot of people. In the United States, when we did the shock ban in Berkeley, which you mentioned in your introduction, the NIMH at that time estimated that 30 million people, that's when we had a population a little smaller than we have now, of 270 million people then, 30 million people had been inpatients in psychiatric facilities. But you don't know it because people don't talk about it. You know, I'm going to stop for breath and let you ask me the questions that you wanted to ask.
Well, when we spoke earlier this week by telephone in preparing for this interview, you told me that you didn't necessarily consider yourself to be anti-psychiatry. I used that phrase. Well, tell us more about that. Why you don't necessarily consider yourself to be anti-psychiatry?
Well, I'm not sure I said that. What I did was say, I know what I said at the demonstration I gave a speech, is there are exceptions. There are psychiatrists who mean well. We had some younger American psychiatrists and one fellow from the UK, and I think this DSM-5 is arousing a lot of disgust within the profession as well. I think, you know, you can go into the profession of psychiatry meaning well, you know. I mean, you think, oh, I like to work with people, and people are in a lot of emotional distress, and I'd like to help them. It'll be a very satisfying career. And then you discover that all you're trained at is a drug pusher, you know. So I think there are exceptions. Now, the word anti-psychiatry, it's very interesting to me because the psychiatrists are using it as a kind of, let me see if I can explain this in a few words, as if it's obviously a bad thing. They say anybody who's opposed to what we're doing is anti-psychiatry. Well, I don't know if I'm anti-psychiatry or not. It's sort of a subtle question. But so what? Why wouldn't you be anti-psychiatry if you look at the profession? Look at what they're doing. I mean, they're constantly demanding more and more power. And I think this DSM-5, because you see there's a lot of power in these labels. And the reason people think it only affects a small number of people, I said it before, but it bears repeating. Nobody wants these labels. Who wants anybody to know that you spent 3 weeks on a psych ward 10 years ago? It just completely takes away your credibility. We had, when I first came into the movement, this American Senator Thomas Eagleton was running for vice president, and it was revealed that he had shock treatment. And he got taken off the Democratic ticket, which was probably contributed to their losing the election. And why? Because he had shock treatment. Well, 10 years later, as I said, along with the 30 million people in psych wards. The NIMH said 7 million people, which sounded about right to me. 7 million people in the United States have had shock treatment. So he was about one out of every 40. When I do the calculations, it scares even me. But a lot of people get it. But, you know, you're not going to go around saying, oh, yeah, I had shock treatment. Only people that are, you know, I tell people about it, but I didn't tell people about it either until I found out about our movement 40 years ago, you know. So I don't know if I'm anti-psychiatry or not. I think that that there's a need for people do have emotional distress, and I don't even rule out that there could be some physiological basis for some of these problems. I know people who have had pretty decent family lives, you know, and their parents were loving and kind, and yet they went crazy anyway. I like that word better than these medicalized jargon. And I think there could very well be a physiological basis for some of these things. But everybody gets all these labels. I mean, they're so eager to do this because the antipsychotic drugs that they give to people with these labels of psychosis, they're among the most profitable drugs in the world. I think of the 10 top, I don't have the exact figures, of the 10 top selling biggest profit drugs, 3 or 4 of them are antipsychotics. So there's a lot of money in that. I think I'm a critic of psychiatry, whether I think there should be I can't say there should be no such thing as psychiatry, because there's always going to be some people doing something, offering help for emotional distress, whether they call themselves witch doctors or psychiatrists. So there's going to be something out there, and it's always going to deserve, if not criticism, skepticism. You know, I think that's what's lacking in the way people relate to psychiatry. They're not skeptical. Psychiatrists make these wild claims about how they've helped all these people. If they're helping so many people, why at the same time when they're claiming they're helping so many people, if they also claim that more and more people are mentally ill? That just doesn't make any sense. That's why I call it a kind of religion, you know. People want to be told how they should live, and religion is a regular religion. The classic definitions of religion, you have fewer and fewer people in the United States that do it, and I think Canadian society isn't that different from the United States. Well, I recognize you're not the 51st state, having lived in Canada for a few months. But I think that, you know, you have less and less people in standard forms of religion, and I think psychiatry, in a way, has become a kind of religion, and that's characterized by you believe in something even though there's no logical or empirical evidence for it. You know, the psychiatrists say, oh, I just met this. The psychiatrists used to say, in fact, they claim lobotomy increased people's IQs. Do you believe that? I don't think anybody listening to me right now believes that lobotomies increase people's IQs, but that was believed at the time. The guy who invented lobotomy got the Nobel Prize from, I guess, his fellow, whoever, psychiatrists. So I think people have to look at psychiatry with a lot of skepticism, and they can start with this stuff about how they make all these claims they're helping people, at the same time they're making all these claims that people are getting worse. I have a suspicion if Jim didn't mention it, there's a journalist named Bob Whitaker, and he wrote two marvelous books. One's called Mad in America, and the other is called, the more recent one is Anatomy of an Epidemic. And Anatomy of an Epidemic talks about how the damage that these psychiatric drugs do, although he's not totally against them, and I'm not totally against them either for short-term use. But I think people should really familiarize themselves with that, because these drugs do terrible things, and there needs to be some skepticism about it. You know, people need to look at psychiatry the way they'd look at any other. You know, you don't go buying a car without checking things out. You know, you read Consumer Reports, or you ask your friends, or you pay more attention, I think, to buying a car than you do to hiring a psychiatrist, and I think that's a mistake. You got much more to lose when you see a psychiatrist.
Your personal story includes some very painful experiences. You were committed as a child to a psychiatric hospital. You had a lengthy incarceration, endured experimental shock treatments. What I'd like to know, Ted, could that story is from the past. Surely it impacted you, but could that story take place today?
They're still experimenting on children. There's a, they're not doing, there's still some people, the last I read, there's some folks at the University of Iowa who advocate shock treatment on children. And I understand in Australia they're doing shock treatment on three-year-olds. Now, let's see, not psychiatric drugs, like thinking of two examples, the U.S. government wants to allow the makers of the anthrax vaccine to test them on children. And who's going to decide who the children are? Most likely they're going to wind up being foster children, as I was. Now, again, I don't know what Canadian law is, but I think it's probably very similar. In the United States, foster parents have no parental rights. That is, you know, the agency that placed the child there says what can happen to the child. So when this doctor wanted kids to experiment on, the New York City Family Hospital was happy to provide me and a whole bunch of other people. Now, I don't know who's going to be have vaccines tested on them, but it's very unlikely to be children of bank presidents and doctors, you know what I mean? And in New York City a few years ago, they wanted to test out AIDS drugs on foster children. And they claimed, well, you know, we're helping the children because then they won't get AIDS. But a lot of the kids had not been exposed to HIV or AIDS at all. They just were convenient subjects for experimentation. There's a woman running a website. Well, it's the name of the organization, the AHRP, the Association for Human Research Project or something like that, whose son was killed by drug experimentation, Vera Sharoff, Sharav, and if people Google her, you'll find some interesting stuff. So there's the anthrax vaccine experiments, there's the AIDS drugs experiments, and another thing about foster kids, it's not exactly experimental. But I've seen a figure that 70% of foster children are on psychiatric drugs, particularly the antipsychotics. And, you know, I mean, you don't see bad. It's bad enough the way things are now, but 70% of this group of children put on these drugs? I mean, has anybody ever... I never was on antipsychotics, but I once was feeling very depressed. And I asked this doctor that I knew, give me something really strong, really strong. And he gave me some, excuse me a second. He gave me some Prolixin, which was a older, well, it was an antipsychotic they used at that time. And it was like a tiny fraction of what people usually had injected. I took it by mouth. And it was the weirdest experience I ever had in my life. It was as if my actual self had shrunk to this tiny little person inside my head, and the person who was me was kind of out there like an automaton, you know. I was still, like, doing things, but I didn't... It's impossible to describe because it's not a normal experience. But I can just imagine getting 100 times that dose and finding and feeling like basically I felt like a zombie, but there was still a little part of me inside that was more observing me rather than controlling me. That's the best I can come up with. It was the most bizarre experience I ever had. And I would suggest that anybody who's allowing them to give their children antipsychotics, but, you know, but gets concerned about their kids, and I think a lot of people do it because, again, psychiatry is a religion, I think that they should just try a dose or two of these antipsychotics. I wouldn't recommend anybody take them long term, but try a dose or two and see the effect that it has. It just turns you, it cuts you off from all of your feelings, you know.
Ted Chabot-Sinsky, we'll have to leave it at that. We've run out of time. But
okay. Well, thank you for
Yeah, this was much appreciated, and I'd like to thank you for your time.
And thank you for inviting me and letting me, you know, talk to your listeners.
Yeah, we look forward to speaking with you again.
Good.
Ted Chabosinski is an American psychiatric survivor, human rights activist, and attorney who lives in Berkeley, California. You can find him online at Facebook.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.